Accession number 2008, reel 15.
Days were about reel 15.
We used to get our fuel in 40-gallon drums, American, 40-gallon drums. And we had to lift them up the back of the Centurion. One under, we used to get one each side, one under it, and lift that back and get them on. And we had to pour the thing in with the original army. I forget what they call them, what they put in. We used to have to pour it in there, 40 gallons, and you do a weight of it, fill up. So we went to one time when the Americans were pulling out of somewhere and loading up this train with all the gear. I suppose that was a fighter thing. We saw these hand bowsers, what they filled up the planes with, this bloke was saying, "Oh no, we can't let you have it, whatever happened." So anyway, I said, went over a corporal I knew, I still write to him actually. I said to him, he said, "Leave it to me," he said, we'll go over and see him. So he said, "How you getting on, mate?" Talking, general chat. You like a drink? So he got a mug there and he pulled him out some of this army rum with Flitch. And he drank that and he was partial to that a bit, so we give him quite a bit. And we finished up with two of the bowsers. So it saved us pushing the 40-gallon drums off a lorry, and then lifted them up right on the back and filling them through the old filler, the army standard filler. It took ages. So when the lorries come up with petrol, come around, they used to leave them standing up, just put the bowsers in the top and drive around each tank and fill up. That took 99% of the work out of it. That was the first thing. In the army, you've got to adapt yourself to use the best things, and that's what we used to do,
Did you need to scrounge a lot of equipment?
We had to for the winter. Ordinary army clothes weren't that good out there. They give us string vests. String vests are only good for sending our parcels home, and picking them. The Canadians and the Yanks are used to that type of winter up north, aren't they? They got all the clothing for it. The second winter we was out there, we finished up with canvas rubber bottom shoes with canvas tops with clips. I think they were Canadian. You just clipped them up to there. But then,
what, clip them on around your shins?
You could put them on, you could clip them up, you see, and all in one, they opened out, and the tongue and everything went out, but that was all in one, so that when you got your foot in there, you just put it in, you could put whatever socks or anything around it, and they just folded up, and they clipped up to the side, little clip. Well, you could take them off at nights. You couldn't take army boots off at night, they'd freeze. You see, the Chinese had what we call gym shoes. Canvas top, rubber sole thing. And they used to have... they used to carry their rations in a sock-like bandolier, which come round the neck and round here. And while the Indian River battle was on, Hersey said to me, he said, "Look at these cheeky buggers." He said, "Come and have a look here." Of course, I had to get over my side to look through his binoculars, look through it. And there was a couple of chinks. sitting down, undoing the bandolier and getting their victuals out, going to have a meal. So he said, look at them cheeky buggers, he said. I don't know how he spotted them. He must have spotted them, been looking round and spotted them. Because the range on that gun, that they'd think I was out of range. So he got the gunner and got him onto it, and they'd just give him a £20 shell. Help him down with a meal.
And what about your rations? What did you have?
We used to use 14-man packs, really. It was mostly bully beef or stewed steak or steak and kidney pudding. So they all come out of tin. But you see, after a time, like we was in the winter, when you into eating all this tin food, that don't agree with you. That has an effect on your stomach. I found out, you know, we used to say it was a tin stomach, you know. But if we was anywhere near where the Yankee bakehouses were, or anything, we used to send some of them over. They liked our stewed steak, and we liked our bread. And sometimes they used to come out with bread, I suppose. It was days old, I don't know. But when they used to bring us bread up, and if we went out the line back to the echelon, we used to be on rations, you know, the cookhouse rations and that. But a lot of it was Australian stuff. Celery, they had celery out there, I remember. I mean, Yanks were having ice cream. Oh, they did that. If they were hard done by, if they didn't get their ice cream, they were running refrigerated cars right up the top, you know. These big packs of meat all frozen, bone frozen and all that. They used to just take it up the front. I suppose they cooked it up there.
Was it easier for you as a tank man to survive than the infantry, because you could carry rations?
Yeah, well, one thing in a tank, you always take your bed on the outside and your rations in the bins. You've always got your man packs, you know. Whether if you're there, not like infantry, go in and then somebody else has got to bring up your bed, and that's another thing with the infantry. I mean, if they go into a tank and somebody else has got to bring up a bedding and they don't bring it up, you ain't got no bloody bedding, have you?
You were fairly self-sufficient, were you?
Yeah, we used to be self-sufficient, but we couldn't move far or sustained action. You've got to come back and refuel and we always used to, the quartermaster used to come up with the rations. That'd be 14-man packs or something like that, you see. And that would last you, about 3 or 4 days, you know, the crew. Then they'd bring up another lot. When you went back to the cookhouse, you know, that's the army food is absolute no-go, really. But, the cooking, that was a bit better than it was when the First World War, you know, in the Second World War, the start of it. But the rations are very basic, aren't they?
You mentioned you saw lots of Korean refugees, but did you have contact with other Koreans, the Korean military or porters?
No, the porters used to have porters go around with the headquarters and all that. They used to do all the but not the squadron level. We never had anybody like that, not the squadron level fighting them. Whereas the infantry would have the porters with them. You see, they used to, and some of these hills, it'd take a half a day to climb them. I don't know how they used to do it. They used to be bandy-legged, kind of blokes with a pole in the hand and an A-frame on the back, and they'd have a couple of packs of 303 ammunition and go up these hills. I mean, they used to carry it as far as they could with the motor transport, but the Korean porters used to carry it along. I know what it's like because during 1940, we was the 3rd Motor Machine Gun Brigade, and we used to have Vickers machine guns with the tripods. Of course, where most of our training was done was in North Wales. and being a mobile machine gun brigade, they used to try and get your mobiles. That's just with time you got up the top of the hill and got your guns set up with all your stuff, and it was time to get down and go off again. And you know, these schemes, it was absolute agony carrying these flipping guns.
And you mentioned that they used to get the Centurions to the tops of hills. Did you encounter any problems getting them to the top of a hill?
No, we used to approach it. We never used to go straight up. Used to go at an angle. Of course, I mean, they would go straight up, but you're testing providence. If you ground going straight up, there's only one thing, do go down. I heard this tale of one centurion threw a track up halfway up a hill in Korea, and some bright spark had the idea of breaking the other track to get it down. And the driver was in it. Whatever they were doing, the other track broke. I won't say, but I think some bright spark thought, well, if we blow the track, because you had to blow a track with plastic charge, you know, to get them out. And I reckon somebody blew the other track, and the bloody thing come down the hill, right up the side of the other hill, and come down like that for three or four times, and then the bloke got out of the driving seat, and he was all right. All the others bailed out. I don't know how true it was. I never saw it. It was a tale.
Now, you told me off the record about how you got beer supplies one time.
That beer? When we stole the Jeep. Well, the Americans had the bottom of the hill where we were halfway up there, wasn't a very big hill, there was a little river stream, and they'd bulldozed it up because the Yanks had got all the equipment and bagged it up and made a little swimming hole there, and the Yanks used to come there for a swim. And I won't mention his name, but my crew commander, he said, God, it seems a pity, he said, they got all that transport and we can't get anybody, you know. And of course, we was more or less on our own, strung out in these hills. So he said, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll go down and we'll wait for them to go in. It's, one lot pulled up and went in for a swim, and we just bugged off with the Jeep up around the hill. And for every day after that, most days after that, if things were quiet, he used to go around seeing whether he'd go to the railhead at Wee John Brew, which was quite a few miles away, and come back. And he used to come back with a crate of beer or something, you know, or what he could get. I don't know how he'd done it, but he always come back with something. He'd come back with this big crate, and there's a 144 packs of 12 packets of Round Trees clear gums. Of course, I was sending them out to the kids. I mean, there was sweets were in them days at rationed. We was all sending them out because they were all packed up. We didn't bother undoing them. We just wrapped another bit of paper around it and put it round through the post, you know. And of course, we had a paper postage in it. Of course, a postman come up the see what we were sending home. Nobody told him, but we got rid of them all. We sent them out. We had a lot of them that we sent them out to kids. Most of them sent them out to children. So they went all the way out there, done up in this beautiful box. Today you give the eye for the wood, and that was all lined with this
tinfoil.
Foil to keep it airtight, and yeah, beautifully done. He said that fell off the back of a lorry. I should never forget that.
And you're telling me as well a story of watching a super fortress crash.
Oh yes, yeah. Well, it didn't actually crash. They'd come back from North Korea, I suppose, and on the island in between Yongdongpo and Seoul, they had a fighter strip. It'd always been a fighter strip. It had been a drone because there was hangars there and all that. And this, I don't know whether it was fortress, I suppose it was fortress. It's anyway, it's similar to the ones what they used to have here during the war. That come in. And that hit the end of the runway. And that was in trouble. That was definitely in trouble all day. I don't think there was about two of the engines were gone, I think. But that was definitely in trouble. And it had been shot up. Then it come in. And it landed, made a fairly decent landing on the strip. That went completely up to the end of the strip, and you could see he got his brakes on because the smoke what was coming out of it gradually began to slow up, and it got up the end of the runway and went over the end of the runway, and I should say about 50 to 100 yards from the end of the runway was this deep ditch, and they just sunk. It went right up and plopped in the ditch like that. And that was about one misty morning, about three days late, and the three Mustangs been out on patrol or something, or train, and I don't know what it was. They come in, and we couldn't believe our eyes that they'd done it. I never see it actually happen, but you couldn't believe our eyes. They come in off the mountains, because it's all hilly round about, and they all three crashed one after the other, ain't it? And that seems unbelievable, doesn't it?
You also mentioned to me as well that you don't think the Royal Ulster Rifles and the Royal Northumberland Fusiliers...
Pardon?
You also mentioned that you didn't think the Royal Ulster Rifles and the Royal Northumberland Fusiliers got the recognition for their part in the Imjin battle.
I don't... You see, I saw it from a stand-back point of view, very close up. And to see there's no infantry regiment in any country as good as ours. May seem a bit biased, but I've been in with the Canadians, I've been in with the Poles. I've been seen the Yanks on the go, but... To see the way these blokes come out after 3 days, it was marvellous, really. I mean, whether they lost cohesion after they went from us, I don't know. But it seems as though when they got to the place where it was blocked, instead of going back off the other side of the way and up the hills and out, they seemed to come back on us and got on the tanks, but I don't know really why that should have happened, because they should have been, well, I say they should have been, there was all them prisoners standing there when we went out, so what had happened before that, I don't know, probably Mr. Padgett, Dr. Padgett, he was captain, wasn't he? He was a good bloke. He probably knew more about it than what I did, actually. But when you see the way the infantry acted, I mean, the engineers we put in, we took them in on the first day and dropped them off at the point, and they come out on the tanks, the two tanks. Because there's one in front of us on the way out was a ginger-haired RA officer. And he had the short carbine, American carbine. And he was standing on the tank with somebody else. And I thought for a second, you know, when I looked at him, I didn't spend all that much time. Bloody fools, he looks as though he's shooting pheasants, you know. He was standing up there on the back of a tank. I mean, he was standing up there, legs spread out, and he was shooting as though, you know, you'd have thought he'd been on a pheasant shoot. I mean, there's things like that enter your mind. Really, You couldn't. We went on patrols in between times. The Indian River. We used to go out on mobile patrols. We used to go out with the Australians. We used to go 20 miles out from the Indian River on a day patrol. Go out there, drop them off. They'd go all over the hills. Couldn't see no bloody Chinese. All you could see was where they were dug. They dug all these positions up, and they were gone. And of course, when they do, they go up at night and dig all these positions in the hills, and they just clear off in the daytime, go miles back. And then when they put in the big attack, they feed them up in the night. You see, this is why we used to do these patrols over. See what evidence was coming on. But there were lots of things that come into your mind that didn't like the Australians.
Why was that?
Too brash. I don't know how to say crude. I don't know. The New Zealanders were totally different. The gunners, they were New Zealanders. We had they used to be totally different people. You couldn't really tell it. I don't know why. The Australians were all right. The Canadians, we never had much to do with them because once they formed the Commonwealth Division, that was after the Indian do, and I never had much really to do with them, only the New Zealanders and the Australians.
Did you have any much contact with any other units at all? You mentioned the Turks.
Well, we was up there a few days with the Turks. We was up there with a... We was in contact one time with an American unit. I don't know that they dished up. We was up on the Injun, banks of the Injun, when the communists were doing the attack on Seoul. We was up there and we was with the Americans, of course. They invited us to have a meal with them. I don't think there was about two troops up there. Of course, we had a meal with them, and when we got there, they give us a plate, you know, like you do at a self-service place, and they put this and that on, and put all the sweet on with meat and razor blades, chewing gum. It made you wonder why they took all that stuff up there, razor blades, chewing gum, and everything you could think of at the end of the queue, you know, anything you wanted.
Well, thank you very much for that. That's been wonderful. Thanks a lot.